Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio.
And a very good evening to you. On agenda tonight, we continue the build-up to election 2011 and speak to one of the ministers in Tony Brown's Manx government who'll be seeking re-election when the Isle of Man goes to the polls in September. The constituency of Rushen, of course, has always been a political hotbed. Indeed, the turnout at the 2006 general election stood at just under 65%. It's the land that's flowing with milk and, well, money. Or so we heard then. The member with me this evening represents a constituency where voters can approach up to three members if they have a problem. Seeking re-election to the constituency for a further five-year term, the Infrastructure Minister, Phil Gawn. Good evening, Mr. Gawn.
Faster,
to you. You've been an MHK since May 2003. You have a history of activity in all things Manx. How do you believe you've benefited Rushen over the past, what is it, just over eight years now?
Yeah, well, I suppose I did my fighting against the system politics before I actually became a member of the House of Keys. And I think very quickly learned that if we want to achieve things, if we want to deliver things as politicians, we have to actually work with the system rather than fighting against it all the time. That's not to say that the system's perfect. I know full well that it isn't and it needs reform as we go forward. But it is absolutely clear to me that working in government, I've been able to achieve far more than if I was just shouting on the sidelines.
So can you achieve much being outside of, without being part of government? Do you think?
Obviously, there's a role for all people in politics.
But is it limited in terms of effectiveness?
Personally speaking, I feel that as a minister or as a member of a department, you have a far greater say on actual delivery of policy. It is certainly true to say that you can be seen as more independent to scrutinise the work of government if you sit outside of government and outside of departments. But actually, it's a bit like sitting on the other side of a hill, looking with a pair of binoculars into someone's house to see how are they managing to, you know, bake a cake or whatever it might be. Actually, when you're in the house baking the cake, you've got far more influence over what the cake's going to look like than if you're sitting on the other side of a hill with a pair of binoculars. So, you know, perhaps that's not the best of analogies, but I think that's personally the way I would like to see it. I'm much more interested in actually delivering, actually getting involved, getting my sleeves rolled up, hands dirty, whatever you want to say, and delivering policy, actually making people's lives in the Isle of Man better, improving the whole of the island for the people I represent.
So how well do you think the present administration's handled the major challenges of the past 5 years? And it has been, particularly the last 2.5 years, turbulent.
It absolutely has been, and you know, clearly, with the benefit of hindsight, there are things that we could have done better. We certainly, I feel, could communicate better. But I think having made that perhaps mild criticism of the way we've handled things, we've got to remember just how difficult a period we've actually gone through. You have to look around the world at countries, major countries like Greece, collapsing in financial sort of turmoil. We've managed pretty well, really. You know,
this is still the calm before the storm, in a way, though, isn't it? It's going to get harder before it gets better.
Well, I'm not so sure that it needs to get that much worse. We still have a relatively vibrant economy. You're bearing in mind everywhere else is in such a mess. We still have fairly good economic growth. We've actually got more people in employment now than we had at the time of the last election. Unemployment, whilst it has gone up actually last month, generally speaking, has been falling this year. We're just around about 2%, and the number of jobs advertised at the job centre are round about the same, or possibly slightly less, than the number of people unemployed. That's a pretty solid record, bearing in mind where the rest of the world is financially, the rest of the world's economies.
We'll come to that. We know there's serious challenges ahead, but how can you promise or give an intention to do your best to your constituents that unless there's a change in the makeup of Tynwald, you can be effective at anything? At the end of the day, any member is one voice.
Well, again, I know that's often a charge that's levied, as indeed is the charge that everyone's manifestos say pretty much the same thing. I've made a point in my last manifesto of committing to certain things.
How true have you remained to that, do you think?
Actually, I mean, obviously, as a politician, I look at it in a particular way, but... You know, I look at 40 commitments that I delivered, of which, or that I made, of which around about 38 I have delivered or endeavoured to deliver in a fairly obvious and public way. So there's only a couple there where I haven't been as successful as I might have been. But the overwhelming majority, I have done what I said I was going to do. And I feel that's really important when people do stand. They should not only say what they're going to shout from the sidelines, they should actually say, actually, this is what I'm going to deliver when I get elected. And it is possible, as a single voice, by working together, working collaboratively, to actually deliver a lot of what you commit to in your manifesto.
So you believe you've been true to that?
Yes, yeah, I think so.
I suppose the key question is going to be from a lot of the doors you're knocking on now. Do you know how we can replace this 40% or so of income that's been lost?
Yes, and again...
Do you know?
I think so. I think we've got a fairly positive way forward here. It would be entirely wrong of me to sort of downplay the difficulties that the next government is going to face. You know, it is going to be a very difficult period of the next 5 years. But I think we also need to bring some degree of perspective onto to some of the more outlandish claims that we're hearing from time to time in various election broadcasts. You know, what we should remember is we had the first hit of £100 million about 2 years ago. We actually have a pink book, which effectively is the budget. Within that pink book, there is a five-year strategy to deal with the loss of that £100 million. And up until last week, when the Treasury Minister announced the next £75 million, that strategy required the use of no reserves whatsoever. Now, that's a very important thing to remember. Bearing in mind, we've got £427 million worth of reserves. That was a figure announced in Junior Tynwald this morning, which was great to see the Junior Tynwald members asking some questions, possibly more sensible.
You said it, Nana.
But, you know, we've got £427 million in reserves. We've dealt with the other 100 million, or at least we have a strategy to deal with that other 100 million over a 4 or 5 year period. So all we need to do now is come up with a further strategy to deal with the 75 million. It's not going to be easy.
No, I mean...
But it is doable. And I think people need to recognise that, as I say, we've got a reasonably strong economy. Provided we don't stall the economy by being overly sharp with our cuts. And bearing in mind, you know, we have cut quite significantly from the amounts we were spending to the amounts we are spending. You know, in real terms, we have cut expenditure. Most countries in the world with, you know, massive national borrowings, national debts, are nowhere near as severe in terms of the cutting that they've done as we have been.
So is it honest to say, though, there's going to be spending reforms, public service cuts, cutbacks in public service numbers, etc.? Would it be dishonest to say that that wasn't going to be looked at, wouldn't it?
Well, I think, actually, you know, maybe it's...
Or is it not going to be that?
Maybe it's a ministerial approach, I don't know. I view things... I always try to view things as positively as I possibly can. Now, I see a great opportunity comes along from this latest £75 million cut. You know, I was fortunate enough to be asked to chair a committee looking into the whole HR structure of government, which... To me, at the time I was asked, I thought, oh gosh, what do I know about HR? Not really interested in this, but, you know, I was offered the post, so I took it. And actually, it's quite fascinating.
Is that an eye-opener?
It was an eye-opener, because what we found was the union side, because I had union and HR representatives from both private and public sector sitting on the committee with me, we reached unanimous conclusions that the current system of managing the public sector, employing the public sector, is failing quite dramatically and needs to be fairly radically changed. And by doing so, we can actually reduce the amount of money that we spend. We can improve the productivity of the workforce, and we can boost morale. Now, these are things that can be achieved relatively quickly if we take the right decisions, are prepared to be a little bit radical in the way we move forward, and actually try and cut out some of the overly bureaucratic processes which currently undermine morale, make it difficult for managers to actually manage their areas of department. So, I think there's some really positive work we can do there.
Are we top-heavy as a government?
Possibly, although I think, again, we've got to be careful that we recognise, because, of course, people say, oh, well, I'm seeing all these manual workers being put out of work. I don't see the same happening in the senior end. I see, proportionally, a reasonably good sort of proportion from each of the areas of government being slimmed down. Certainly in my department, we have had situations where fairly senior managers have been managed out of existence in the department. We've managed to do it reasonably easily in the Department of Infrastructure because we have a bigger workforce. You know, so with 800 workforce and people working, let's say, a 40-year lifespan, 40 years of work for the department as a maximum, clearly there will be a fairly good turnover in terms of numbers on a fairly regular basis. So it is easier to downsize.
I mean, we say
perhaps in a smaller department.
It's easier to downsize. If the cuts don't close the gap, how do you propose the next government tries to increase its income?
Well, I think...
I think you were talking just on a minor matter a few weeks ago that we can't do all the roadworks. There's just not enough in the budget. Granted, it was a particularly hard winter.
Yes, well, I think, first of all, I think that we can actually cut quite a bit more out of government and make government more effective. And provided we make the right decision, particularly with regards to the economy, so that we ensure that the economy can continue to thrive, and it does need a certain degree of government intervention in the right place to allow the private sector to generate the income and make sure that the economy grows. Provided we do that carefully and cleverly and slim down the size of government in the most appropriate ways without you risking stalling the economy. For example, a lot of people say, why do you not cut the capital programme back? You were spending all this money on capital schemes. It's wrong. It means that we're wasting all this money at a time we should be cutting back. Well, actually, if we cut back on the capital programme at the moment, 70% of the work that the construction sector does comes from government capital schemes. We cut that back, suddenly you get lots of construction firms going out of business because there isn't the same level of work about. So I think we've just got to be careful at the way that we manage this. But I think it is possible to get through this next 5 years, come out the other side and actually be in a far better position, much more effective in the way we deliver services, much more efficient in the way we deliver services, and actually be just in the right position to exploit the improvements, the upturn, if you like, in the global economy, which will probably be coming around, 3, 4, 5 years time.
Is there an acceptance then that perhaps the deal we did have until two and a half, three years ago was perhaps, well, it was a very good deal, perhaps more than we should have been getting?
Well, I think the important thing, and I think both the Treasury Minister and the Economic Development Minister have said this, is that the deal was a deal that was struck by two parties. You know, the Isle of Man didn't force the United Kingdom into the deal that gave us what they perhaps would say, in fact, that they have said in their PR, was perhaps overly lucrative to the Isle of Man. So what we look at is the deal we have now, and we know that the deal we have now is still beneficial. You know, it's still worth us having a...
Abrogation, not an option.
Well, I think all these things have to be considered as we go forward. And you know, I think we are now in a much freer position to have more thought on doing some things perhaps more radically different in the future. But it shouldn't be done as a reaction as a knee-jerk reaction to what's happened to us recently. We need to have proper, carefully planned out, carefully thought out strategies as to how we move forward. And, I've already called earlier this year for far stronger building of international relations, not necessarily just with London, but also looking at some of the other countries around our shores. You know, we have now a totally different demographic in relation to the devolved parliaments and assemblies. We need to be working our sort of lobbying skills on them as well as on Westminster. And we also need to look further afield. There are other countries, similar sort of cultural backgrounds to ours that we could be looking to. Scandinavian countries, Ireland, obviously their economies are a bit shaky at the moment, but they do offer other international relationships other than looking purely through the United Kingdom.
Do you think
that's important?
It is important. Do you think as it stands we have the politicians or enough of them with the dynamics and the the commercial instinct, if you like, to provide to the necessary solution to drive this forward?
What we need is politicians who are prepared to take good advice.
Have we got enough of them?
Understand when they're given good advice. I think one of the great weaknesses of politicians is they tend to believe their own propaganda, and we need to be much more careful in ensuring that we are listening to the right sorts of people. You know, for example, I know Hugh Davison has intervened in the latest VAT snatch from the UK. He has some ideas there that may or may not be sensible. But I think, you know, one thing that has come out of the VAT after the announcement from the Treasury Minister was the announcement by the United Kingdom that they had no intention to come back for more money. Well, perhaps what we should be doing is going back to the United Kingdom Treasury and saying, well, that's excellent news. Perhaps we could have a little codicil to the agreement that we have signed. You know, we're not altering the agreement, that's fine. But we'll have a little addendum, if you like, that just says what you've said publicly, that you're not coming back for any more money. That will give us the surety that we're looking for, I think, in the
sure.
Island. We can then plan with surety where we're going for the next 10 years.
Is that likely?
Well, if they've said it publicly, I can't see why they would necessarily have a problem with signing up to something like that. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's the sort of thing I think we should be asking.
Going back to your cake analogy, I suppose, the proof of the pudding will be in the eating. You said at the top of the programme you were a devout Manx nationalist. Are you still? Are you now a member of the establishment? Or as I detect, are you still a bit of both?
Well, I think it's important to recognise that I suppose fundamental philosophy is that we should make the decisions that are right for the Isle of Man, and we should be in a position to make the decisions that are right for the Isle of Man. And perhaps it could be argued that in the past we've been far too influenced by what others, particularly the United Kingdom, might think if we do a particular thing or work in a particular direction. This is why I think we need to develop alternative international relationships rather than purely looking through the United Kingdom. We also look at other possibilities. I'm not saying that we should break our links with the United Kingdom, because clearly the United Kingdom is our major trading partner and we would be very foolish to sort of break that link. But we can extend links to other countries, so we do actually have other options available to us in the future.
Is political nationalism alive and well still, or do you think perhaps some of the torchbearers have gone off somewhere into the wilderness?
Well, I think the work that the Scottish National Party has done in Scotland proves absolutely clearly that nationalism can find a home in people's hearts.
Can it in the Isle of Man, though?
Delivered. I think it can. And actually, you know, certainly as far as canvassing is concerned, I haven't done a huge amount of canvassing yet, but I've certainly been around quite a few homes. And, you know, there is a view that, well, maybe actually we should be looking a little bit more independently and looking to you know, rather than just having one link to the outside world, that maybe we look to see can we develop others. So that it is certainly a possible way forward there.
At one point, not so long ago, I think you considered starting a mainstream nationalist party, didn't you? You considered it.
Yes.
Was it ever an option to get off the ground?
Well, I think it is. I mean, obviously, we have Mec Fanon anyway, and Mec Fanon has the ability, I think, to become a strong political force in the Isle of Man if its members choose. I think, generally speaking, though, party politics in the Isle of Man remains an area that most people I speak to would shy away from. Party politics has its advantages, but it also has its weaknesses. You know, the dogma of party politics means you have to vote for things that you don't necessarily agree with, whereas independent politicians can make their own minds up as to when and how they want to vote on particular issues.
You were, I think, just 2 years into your political career. You were appointed Minister of then Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry. That was a post you held until last year. You were unhappy at losing that, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. I have to say, bitterly disappointed to leave the department.
Close to your heart.
Not because I didn't recognise that at some point I would have to go, but there were quite a lot of things that I had worked on for 5 years that were almost, in my view anyway, almost complete, and I would have liked to have had the opportunity to finish those areas.
How do you feel now?
Well, Department of Infrastructure is a fantastic department. There's so much scope for reform within that department. We have quite an archaic system in the department, which needs to be, brought into the 21st century. But just with regards to agriculture and fisheries, it's not an area that most politicians have any particular interest in. And yet, food politics going forward throughout this century is going to be more and more important as the influence of countries like China, India and Brazil grows. You have that grain boat that used to sail across the Atlantic from America and call in Western Europe is actually more likely to be going off somewhere else. We need to make sure we can grow our own food, produce our own food. I had a fantastic opportunity as minister to build relations with fellow ministers in the various countries, Ireland, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and indeed in England, did a lot of lobbying and work for the fishermen there. Similarly, had the opportunity to lobby in Brussels on the part of Manx farmers. So I've gained quite a lot of experience through the department and clearly disappointed to leave there, but we have to move on. But Department of Infrastructure is, again, an area that affects everybody's lives. We obviously have got the roads and clearly we've got problems there which we need to resolve. There are various ideas that we're working on that we'll be able to deliver the services much more effectively than they're currently delivered, so that we don't end up with a system where you've got a gang of men waiting for a load of tarmac to come and the tarmac's gone to the wrong place and they're sitting around waiting for something to do because they need to get the materials. And
has restructuring worked?
Well, I think it has. I think it's
was the jury still out?
I'm absolutely sure that it has worked, in that it has provided that boost that has been required for quite some time in government, that's sort of catalyst for change. Now, I would probably argue that we should have gone a bit further. We should have looked a lot more, indeed, at the scope of government.
The next House will.
I'm absolutely sure it will. It has to. But I think the point was we had a choice to make. Either we rejected the restructuring and waited for the perfect solution, which would have been restructuring with a bit of looking at scope as well, or we went with what we had on the table, which was a restructuring, and then move on to scope after the next election. I actually see clear evidence where certainly having planning and highways, for example, in the same department is making it a lot easier to get planning decisions made more quickly. There's clearly an awful lot more we need to do. And we have actually, going against my personal political grain, we have actually expanded the policy section in planning for the simple reason that that's one of the areas that's holding up the economy. We need to make sure we get our policy done much more effectively in the planning section. So we have managed to expand there, but not with any increase in budget. We found the money from savings elsewhere in the department. And I think that has to be the way forward. It's a key message that I've delivered. As DAF Minister, I was 5 years in the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry. Over that period, we actually reduced the budget by 7%. Now, everybody, all the other departments' budgets were increasing by 10 or 15%, but we actually reduced by 7%, but at the same time increased the money that went out to the farmers, which are the people we were supposed to be supporting. So I think that's a very positive thing. And again, as Infrastructure Minister, I've done the same thing, reduced the budget this year by about 7%, which hasn't massively affected frontline services. I mean, there are a few problems, but not
on the agriculture front. I mean, we could have a programme about that. And I know you introduced a lot. There was obviously you had the fishing quotas, meat derogation, to name but a few. I know you sort of took a hardline stance on illegal fishing, for example, the marketing structure reformed, etc., etc. But then you moved to infrastructure. I think it's well known you were the minister who offered David Cannon a role in your department. It never happened. Why?
Well, I think, my view has always been that regardless of what people think about politicians, if the public have elected them, and certainly in David Cannon's position, they had elected him by a very significant majority, then we are there as politicians to work with each other. And if politicians want to work with me, I'm more than happy to work with them. I worked with David twice, actually, as DAF minister, and I would have been more than happy to continue to work with him. But I think there was a view taken at the time that a number of other members of Tynwald weren't prepared to do that. And, you know, whilst I'm sure I would have had a very effective member with David, if I was on my own with just David and me, clearly we needed more members, because the Department of Infrastructure is one of the biggest departments now of government, and there are lots of political responsibilities which a single minister with a single political member would not be able to fulfil.
Would it have been hard to stick to your guns? Could you have risked losing support from other members then?
Well, I think the issue was I needed more members in the department, and if some of the other members were saying they weren't going to join the department, if you know, Mr Cannon was there, then I just have to go
sure.
with that.
Sure. So will you challenge, you're a member of government, but will you challenge them when they're wrong?
Well, yeah, and again, I think one of the things we have to get far better as we go forward as Council of Ministers, assuming, of course, I'm either elected or the new Chief Minister wants me, what we have to get far better is communication about how Council of Ministers actually works, because I think people believe the propaganda which is put out by the opposition, and they don't hear the way council ministers works, you know, from us. We need to open that up to a far greater extent. You know, council of ministers is a debating chamber. It's not a rubber stamping chamber. And there are regular and very heated at sometimes discussions about how best to serve the Isle of Man, how best to move things forward. Unfortunately, because of the perhaps, you know, my argument, perhaps overly secretive nature of the way we do our business, the public don't get to find out about that. But equally, from a you know, point of view of trying to provide a coherent, you know, united way forward, we can't have too many open public disputes amongst ministers. We have to be reasonably secretive, much of how I hate to use the word.
But we could go on for another half an hour, and I know there's a lot in your pamphlet, if you like, manifesto regarding what's happened in Russia, and obviously I think you're on Twitter, you're on Facebook, you've got a website now. Just finally, why should the people of Russia invest their vote in you in September? What's in it for them?
Well, I think I've got a proven track record of delivery. You know, I've actually got a YouTube site as well. People can go and look at my videos on the YouTube site and see me describing some of the things I've actually achieved during that time as you know, as member for Russian. You know, I believe that I can deliver for Russian and for the Isle of Man. I make commitments and I stick to them as far as I possibly can. Proven track record of delivery for the people of Russian, a positive attitude, and a belief that collaboratively, working with people who may not have your point of view, but working with them, we can actually deliver really positive solutions for the Isle of Man. And there is a positive future for the Isle of Man if we work together.
Phil Gunner, I don't know where the time's gone. Thank you very much for your time this evening.
Thank you.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio.